I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room. Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminished and the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed in the rent room. We let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want. Welcome to the Rant Room.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest, and you guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room, where we keep it real, we keep it opinionated, we keep it what, y'all? Wakanda.
I forgot we're saying Wakanda. 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 Wakanda.
You can join in with us, Sam. Yeah. We keep it what?
Wakanda. Wakanda. All right.
Yes, bitches.
And we're here.
So y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room. On this show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture, books, all that shit.
All of
that. I had to incorporate that shit in my little spiel right there.
There you go. I'm very proud of you.
Brother got bars and stuff.
So. No, I haven't seen you for a minute. Like, it's been a month?
It's been a long time since I left you.
Yes. Has it been a month?
It's been a minute. You've been gone.
I've just been to Santa Ana.
Doing your thug dizzle.
Until we got, the fires came through. No, well, I'm working. I was in Santa Ana. I was working because we were interviewing and stuff. And then we have to evacuate on Sunday.
Oh, did you?
Because the fire was 5 miles away from the house. Ooh, like, really? Literally, I woke up on Sunday and I walked past the windows. And I'm like,
why is it black out there?
And normally the thing is, I'm really good at sensing, like smelling stuff. I didn't smell anything. And it wasn't until I walked past again. And I'm, you know, having to look at the pool light. Because, you know, every now and then I like to rescue bees. Because we have like a lot of flowers. And the bees fall in a pool. Oh, and God. I go outside with
you
the dogs.
You go out and get them?
I get them. Where they are in danger. I get
and
a little
Every
no, I get a little stick because they'll be kind of flat. And I go a little stick and take them and I dry them out. I give them a little sugar water and I resuscitate them and then they go about their business.
Really?
Yes.
Like a fucking bee hospital.
I don't let bees drown in pools. I don't do that. I help them.
You must not be allergic.
Well, you shouldn't because they're dying off. And we need them for our food.
We need them for our food supply. Right. They are part of that you know, that interconnection.
Can they just not think about
the interdependence. You know.
They say if the bees go extinct, we have 4 years until there's
we have 4 years.
Until there's no
so I, wow, really? I, as that warm-hearted person who teaches science to little people, I rescue. If I need to jump in a pool, I will. But luckily, we have sticks where I can reach out and do things. So I happened to look. I said, well, let me just kind of just glance, because sometimes you could just see them literally. And I look, and it was like, hell, had opened up. And I was like, should I be concerned? So I turned the news on, and then the alarms, they have it now where your phones, they will call your house now and your cell phone, and they would tell you, get the fuck out your house. We not coming, bitches. Go. So I had to call my boss and say, look, I'm going to hang around here for another 30 minutes. Y'all need to come home because I'm either going to snatch up your dogs and go and whatever. But luckily they came in like 15 minutes later and packed up their stuff and left. So literally we were there. Wow. And it was like coming. And that's the second time that's happened in a month. So, yes.
That's the thing about having a big, beautiful house on a hill. You sitting in the hill with the big-ass view, and then you got to deal with the elements, don't you?
Well, we were lucky.
We ain't supposed to be up there. That's why.
See, everything was good because the Santa Ana winds was blowing, y'all. It was blowing. Mm-hmm. And the problem was...
She's living in Santa Ana, where the winds get their name from.
Where Satan, yes. Right. It's called the devil wind. That's why it's called the devil wind for a reason. But what happened was...
You live on San Andreas Fault, but it's a pretty view.
But we had a barrier. We had the 91 freeway and the 241. We were protected. But what happened was...
No.
Oh, one of those embers flew over across, or as one of my friends said,
they're like, is that a tree over there? I think we can make it.
It flew over and caught fire. As one of my friends in San Diego said, they thought somebody little like, well, how do fires get across it? They said, well, little bunny rabbits catch on fire, and they run across the street, and that's how it started.
You know what it was? It was a bee.
You
saved that bee,
and
the bee fucked it all
and
up.
And the bee fucked it all up. So anyway, so I had to evacuate. So I was around for a minute, but I wasn't near you. But I'm so excited today, you guys.
All right.
Oh, I got to finish your spiel. You hear her voice.
You know how we're doing around with our crazy little self.
Yes.
So that's Lisa Bolakaja.
Yes, she hear me.
The street nerdist herself.
Yes.
What's going on, girl? How you been?
A lot of stuff popping off.
Right. It's been a minute.
Hey, I know y'all been listening to the news with Weinstein and all that kind of stuff that a lot of us knew about, but no one said nothing about. Right. But shoes are hitting. Stuff is happening. Yep.
Chris said Weinstein hit on him. So, hey.
What? what?
I have other stories. I interned at Miramax for a couple of years, and he never hit on me.
I have other stories about that stuff, right. But...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
The only rumor I know is he's supposed to be well hung. That's the only thing I heard.
Of course, that's the one rumor you were here. That's
well, I'm a gay man. I would know that. Regardless, his ugly ass wouldn't pay him any.
Well, a lot of stuff's going on, and all the but I'm excited today.
Right.
Two things are going on today. One, you've heard me talk about this guy for like since we've been doing the podcast. We've been doing the podcast for 3 years now. Has
over,
it been three?
Over
years?
Three.
3 years. Yeah, over 3 years. Mm-hmm. And you guys always hear me. And I always talk about Sam. Joshua Miller.
Who?
Sam J. Miller.
Who's
the sentence bender?
You need the sentence bender who you need to be following. And whenever you hear me talk about Claren, you hear me talk about my brother from another mother. This is the person I'm always talking about, bragging on. Right. Fantastic writer, one of my favorite writers out there. Mm-hmm. So he's here. In West Hollywood.
And he's like 19, 20. He's young.
He's like young. Like he was like maybe 14 when we did Clarion together, and I was like 12.
Right.
So.
She just said you was older than her.
So he's all the way here. You know, he's doing his book tour. He was here meeting his book agent and also his TV film agent.
Yes.
And so I'm just throwing it out there to brag because I need somebody to option this book so I can be in this movie and just be a background character to say my line. There they go over there. They went that way. That's all I need. That's all I need. So I always say whenever he was in town, we have to have him come on the show because he's amazing.
Can Let
I
just say we also have my man Chris Derrick in the house.
Chris is our cousin.
Hi, people.
Chris is our cousin.
They're going to hear his voice.
You're going to hear his voice. You always hear Chris. Chris, and for those of you who don't know, Chris is like our cousin who's like, whenever I'm gone, Chris always is always a real, real good dude for coming in and sitting in and like taking over when I'm gone. And also coming in when I'm here because he's one of those people where...
He has a great perspective.
Yes.
I love it.
He's a person who appreciates and respects film and he watches a lot of film.
You do?
A lot of international film.
That's his girlfriend.
A lot of classic film. I think that is. That's his fiancée.
Right,
that's how it is.
If I ain't getting nothing down, I'm going to go see a movie or some shit.
Movies are my mistress. That's
And he's also, you know, a director, writer, producer, so he's always great to have in there. And of course, if you heard me talking shit on Twitter about Mother, that's the person I saw with. And Chris is really cool because I'll be sitting there making comments, and you know too, because I made some comments when we saw Blade Runner, me and Sam.
They were amazing.
And we'll talk about Blade Runner because as a science fiction writer, I need you to go in. So can I just read his bio?
Let's go in.
Because his new
book. Introduce him.
This is my brother from another mother.
Hi.
His name is Sam Joshua Miller. Sam J. Miller. His newest book is out. It's got rave reviews. Do you know that he's got like Jacqueline Woodson did a blurb?
Did the blurb.
Oh. Yeah. If you don't know who she is, you should like jump over a bridge and like hurt yourself right now. Oh, look, you got Alyssa Wong. Hey, Alyssa. Later on. Yep. Basically, fam. You know, a lot of our friends. I'm going to read his bio. I mean, it doesn't do him justice.
Now, were you guys in the same class at Clarion?
We were in Clarion 2012. Not only were we in the same class, he was my roommate.
Yep.
Me, him, and Ruby.
We were the best roommates.
We were the best roommates because he respected my need to have a cupcake and a shot of tequila.
He said, fuck it,
every
I'm
Thursday. Look, Thursday was my day.
Cupcake and tequila.
Listen.
We had a system.
What
flavor?
It was Sprinkles Red Velvet
cupcakes. Red Velvet cupcakes. You know why I don't like those that much?
Why?
Because I feel like
shut up.
My heart is dying. Whenever
shut
I eat
up.
It's
because you're on your fourth one.
It's so good.
It's because you've got...
It's so good. You're like, oh.
Oh, you like it in a good way. I thought you were saying a negative way.
No, I hate it because I eat them. I'm like, oh my God, now I'm going to have a heart attack.
No, that's my Sprinkles. That's the way Sprinkles Red Velvet is. And that was my reward.
I know.
Thursday was my day. And then I would go to Sprinkles and I would come back to our apartment because we had our graduate house and we shared an apartment together. And I would have the top shelf tequila on top of the refrigerator, and I would come in after we do Mike's critique.
Top shelf.
Tequila. I was good. I knew I was free. Because once you've done your story for the week, you know you had a good 3 or 4 days to like goof off because you didn't have to do nothing else but read other people's shit and chill for a couple days before you had to write again. Mm-hmm. And literally, I would sit there, I'd do my shot. And, you know, Sam was always wonderful because he's a great elixir of teas. He is the tea master, the tea whisperer. So he would make teas, and sometimes we would get up late in the middle of night, and he'd be up writing, and we'd sit.
I would steal from the dining hall.
And he would steal from the dining hall. And I always wrote in our apartment. He always wrote inside the UCSD library. Like, he would go, like, a little, he'd pack his little bag.
You can write in all that quiet, huh?
Child, he'd be gone. He would pack his little bag, and he would leave the apartment. All right, see y'all later. And he'd be gone. I'd be jogging by my iPad. Sometimes I would come to the library. I'd see him, like, huddled up. Didn't you used to be on, like, the top floor? by the pigeons and shit.
Yeah. And no, they have these shit big ravens, like the biggest ravens you ever saw, that just like roost up there and like look at you through the glass like
forevermore, nevermore. Yeah. You know, write those stories. Anyway, so let me read his bio. It is Sam J. Miller. Sam, this is such a cute picture of you and your little cat.
Thank you. My dad took that.
Aw, so precious. Yeah. Is that coffee you're drinking in that photo?
Yes, of
look
course.
At you. So anyway, so go get his
book. Poses called, don't work on
his
podcasts,
book is called The Art of Starving, and this is his bio. Sam J. Miller lives in New York City now, but grew up in a small town in upstate New York. He's the last in a long line of butchers, even though he's a vegetarian. In no particular order, he's been a film critic, a grocery bagger, a community organizer, and activist. He's a strong activist. He works with the homeless in New York. So a lot of times I worry about him because he'll go out in the streets and do stuff, and I'll just be watching his Twitter line, making sure everything's okay, stuff didn't pop off. So go, Sam. He's also a secretary. He's been a secretary, a painter's assistant, and a model. And, ooh. Sexy, I'll sexy now.
I'll show you the paintings. You can put it in the show notes.
Okay. And the guitarist for. And a guitarist in a punk rock band. His fiction has been nominated punk for the Nebula. Huh? Yes. He has done all that. He has lived all the lies.
I'm only 19.
And he's only 19. His fiction has been nominated for the Nebula Award, what, two times? Three times?
Three, but you know,
three times. The first two times I went to Chicago to go see it, he did not win. I was upset.
Oh, that's the one you remember.
The third time he was nominated last year, it was in Pittsburgh, yeah. And I didn't go.
Lisa said, you cannot win.
And I told him he can't win because I had gone the first two times, and I thought, wouldn't you know it, if I wasn't there, he would probably win. And I told him, I said, could you just not win this year?
I said, Lisa, I promised not to win, and I didn't.
And he didn't.
Just for you.
So I love friends that keep their word and keep their promises to us. So like I said, he's been a Nebula Award nominated three times. He's the Theodore Sturgeon Award, and he was longlisted for the Hugo Award and has won the Shirley Jackson Award. If you don't know who Shirley Jackson is, you need to go into your life right now because she's one of the beasts, one of my favorite authors out there. So if you want to learn anything about writing and just learning about how to set mood and setting and tone in your writing, Shirley Jackson is the one you need to read. He's a graduate of the Clarion Writers Workshop, class of 2012, The Awkward Robots. Yay! His husband of 15 years, a nurse practitioner. Hi, Wansi! And Wansi...
what kind of name is that? Wansi.
Wansi. He's Dominican. Dominican, baby.
Okay. His mom made that name up.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Right. It's amazing. So he's he's doing some important work in Puerto Rico right now.
He's
so.
Actually part of a medical relief mission
yes,
to Puerto Rico.
Wow.
So he's doing the work, and he's also a sci-fi fan. And he's a fabulous, he does his wonderful knitting, and he has the best fingernail polish. And whenever I'm at their apartment, he has the whole collection right there. I don't need to go anywhere.
You need to have him on the show.
You really do have Wansi. Because
cool.
We sit there, and we do our nails, and just sit there, and he knits, and we watch reality TV, and we just relax and just cackle. And also, like I said, his husband, 50 years, is a nurse practitioner, and is way smarter and handsomer than Sam. Although I disagree with that. I think they're both equally handsome. They're like my favorite couples. I have like a top 25 of couples, you know, and they're way up there. Because you know it's when you like the person that
top
who's your 25. Friend.
25, you gotta trim that down to like top 10. 25.
Because
like,
I love so many people, and I don't want to leave anybody right. out. I got international people too. But what I love about it is when you have a person who you like your person, but when their husband or partner or their wife is just as cool as they are, to the point where sometimes you will call their partner up to say hi and check in with them and say what's up. Oh yeah, hey you. I do that to a lot of my friends. And I don't mean to,
my dad does that.
But it's because their partners are just as cool. I know.
I'll
it's
be like I'll talk to you in 2 weeks. What right. you calling? Right.
But it's amazing. So anyway, he's an amazing person, and I really want him to come in and talk about his book, because when you are at that level of writing that he is, when you're getting nominated for the largest and biggest international awards that have to do with science fiction, I think it's important that I have him come on here and talk about sci-fi, his career, writing sci-fi, and I really want us to get into talking about Blade Runner.
Let's get in.
Okay? Cool. So first of all, hi, Sam.
Hi. Thank you so much.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here. I just want to give you a heads up. You might be humiliated later because I see that you're right next to the OWN lot, and I might need to break in to get Ralph Angel's Raglan Steve wardrobe from Queen Sugar. So if you hear sirens, just like draw the blinds
all
and
right.
like, pretend you don't know
dear
me.
Dear Oprah, I don't know him.
I don't think they shoot in here anyway. So.
I'm sure they don't, but they might have some of his clothes.
Some of his memorabilia or some things laying around, you know. They might.
Wardrobe could be here.
It could be here. It could be here. Atlanta,
I should have done more research. I didn't realize until I walked onto the set.
I think this is just corporate here.
Yeah.
Oh, that's,
so, Sam, we know they're a science fiction writer. Like I said, we know that your story is typically, every time you put a short story out, it's going to be nominate something. You're actually at the level of like a Ted Chiang almost now.
Oh, stop.
Because even though we don't get a story from Ted for like every 10 years or so, every time you fucking have something come out, it's going to be nominated for something. So you're at that level now. Like when you put something out, I'm usually shocked when nothing gets nominated. And that's scary now because a lot of people that we know are at that level.
But you know what's been happening? Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah.
Every time she has any of her friends who win awards or something, she's like, Hollywood, she'll make a big announcement. Right, right. Y'all should buy this. Right.
They should.
Now, your shit's coming up.
All right. They should.
All right. Hollywood.
Because it's I don't big up most science fiction and stuff, like only the really good stuff. I think right. that really has something. And one of the things I think that, Sam, I think you definitely have in our class is you definitely have a voice. Like, and it's not just, you know, not because he writes cool stories, because he does. Mm. But there's some, like, when I read his stuff, I'd automatically feel an immediate intimacy. Like, I feel like these are characters that I'm talking, I don't even care if it's a story about, like, there's the one story you wrote about that was amazing, that you wrote about the Stonewall. In New York.
Oh, you ever saw?
Yes. Yes, honey, yes. Okay. You know.
It's called The Heat of Us. Yes. It was in Uncanny Magazine. It was a World Fantasy Award nominee. And it's about, it's a retelling of Stonewall with pyrokinesis.
Hmm. Interesting.
Okay, so what issue was that in? Uncanny?
I don't know.
Just go online. Just go.
Yeah, the Heat of Us.
It's called The Heat of Us.
I'm going to go look
it's
it up.
It's amazing. But in every single story that he writes, you immediately, you know, you're with the characters. Like some people, you write characters you don't like, you're not interested in, but you just have there's an immediacy to your work. And I think that when I was in Clarion, that was at the level I was trying to get to. It was like, whenever you put a story up, whenever your story came up, it's like, here we go. It's like, I need to be able to learn how to do that. And I know you've been writing for a long time. You've been writing short stories and stuff longer than I have. So I think your writing is very important. And I'm not saying this just to fluff you up and make you feel wonderful.
By all means, continue.
By all means, continue. But I'm just saying, it's like, there's something very unique, and there's just something, I don't know, it's just something, whenever you have a new story that comes out, I'm ready and I'm always bragging about it, but I really learn a lot from it and I always enjoy it. So what I want you to talk to our audience who are listening out there, who are writers and screenwriters and all of that, tell us a little bit about the book, the making of this book, The Art of Starving, and I don't know, just kind of give us a background in terms of how you got into writing, because not only were you a writer, you edited a book, an anthology called, what is it, Horror After 9/11?
Correct.
So just kind of give us like a basic, like how you got into writing, what you do, and then we'll get into talking about the book.
Sure. Well, I like to say that I became a writer by telling lies so that people would be my friend, because in elementary school, I was really bad at sports and no one liked me, and so I would tell people that I had seen horror movies that I hadn't actually seen.
I would do that too!
So I would be like,
liar, liar, pants on fire.
I had read the back of the box of The Shining, so I would tell this long, like, weeks. I would stretch it out over weeks and add all this crazy shit that obviously wasn't in the movie, and nobody knew the difference, and people were really into it, and then they were my friends. So that's the root of my writing. And this novel that just came out as my debut novel is actually my seventh novel, because I wrote six novels before it that I really loved and was really happy with and put out into the world and sent to every agent and editor, and absolutely nobody wanted them. So I feel like I spent like 10 years failing, and that was really, like, when I look back on it now, I'm really grateful for that time. I think that that's when I got my basics, like the mechanics of prose and how to structure sentences and stories, and it forced me to do a lot of reading and learning about why I wasn't succeeding in writing a good novel. And the other thing that was happening that is like the advice that writers always get that they tend to ignore, I know I heard 1,000 times and always ignored, was that, you know, you really have to write the story that is you and that is your story and that you are, you know, not writing to sell, right? That is not the story that you're trying to be commercial with, because the novels that I wrote before this were all me trying to be The Hunger Games any number of other like novels that I thought would sell. And it was only when I got really annoyed with all that and said, fuck it, I'm going to write the dark, twisted, messed up thing with a lot of cursing and gay sex that's sort of like rooted in my own adolescent eating disorder experience, and that was the book that ended up selling.
Mm-hmm. I just want to say this. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I was just, Chris came the other night. I just did this. I just moderated the new movie with the new Tom Cruise movie,
American Made.
Oh my god!
Awesome with film, the writer, by the way.
And he talked about the same thing. He had this story. I swear to God, every time we interview somebody on this show or I interview people in other places, the one that broke them in was the one that everybody told them not to write. And the one that you wrote from here, from your heart. And it's, and everybody else experiences writing 7, 8, 10 other scripts or books or whatever in that vein of trying to do what everybody's asking for. And then you go off and go, I'm just going to write this one that I've been living with forever.
Right.
And that's the one to get you with every time.
Well, see, okay, that's, you know, I see that happen a lot, and I kind of feel, and that's something that I've been going through of late, and I kind of feel like what's behind that is you write a lot of, there's so much stuff that you're interested in that gravitates you to writing stories, watching movies, and you want to tell a story in that space, but that might not necessarily be what people are going to get excited about. And mainly, I think it's because you're writing something that's in, that's going to be compared to something else. Mm-hmm. See, you write something that's like only you can do. Mm-hmm. No one else can write it.
Right.
And then you can't compare it to anything because if I'm going to write, I don't know, like a Hunger Games, right? Everyone's going to be like, look, the first thing they're going to say is like the Hunger Games. And then they're starting to say to themselves, where does it deviate from that?
Right.
And the minute you deviate in a way that they don't like, then you've lost them.
Mm-hmm.
But if you tell a story like this, then, you know, they have no idea like where it's going to go either. And that level of surprise is helping you as the writer.
Right.
Yeah. Reminds me a lot when Pulp Fiction first came out and everyone lost their shit.
Sure.
You know, because it was like, I mean, we've seen stories before where you have crazy things happen, but it was like the fractured narrative, the, I mean, just the
poppy dialogue.
Yeah. I mean, bringing in John Travolta. Yes. Just that kind of thing. And then, of course, as soon as it became like this big, successful thing, and I'm pretty sure when they were shopping around, people were like, I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. And then when it hit, we had all the derivatives after that. It was like every single movie after that. We want that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it came from an authentic place. Like, we're going to just put balls to the walls, write what we want to write.
Right.
Fuck it.
This I mean, clearly there's like, there's money to be made and careers to be built on writing the derivative shit. Like, those movies got made.
Right.
Those movies came out. Those writers are probably doing all right. So I'm not, you know, I'm sure that works for some people. It just didn't work for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, but I think what happens is, I mean, for screenwriters, is that since you write the original thing and it comes out, then they just, you know, and then they'll turn around and say, oh, come write the next Hunger Games for us.
Right.
Come to, and you're like, fuck, what about my original stuff? No, fuck all that.
Right.
We ain't got time for that shit.
Right.
Do the shit that's been, you know, that we can rehash 10 times and over,
right.
You know? So.
Right.
So you were writing all these books that didn't go anywhere, like you said. You were writing short stories then, too. Like, I'm trying to remember, because when you came into Clarence, did you already have a couple of short stories that had been published?
I mean, I had been publishing since, like, 2002, 2003, usually in, like, zines and, like, queer magazines that folded the issue that I came out in.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, I was, like, putting my stuff out there and sending to, you know, I wrote a lot of speculative fiction, but I was very focused on non-genre markets. So I was sending to a lot of literary journals, and I sort of had it in my mind that you did two different things, right? There was like literary fiction where you did smart, deep, awesome character shit. And then there was genre fiction where you did fun, exciting adventure and gnarly aliens and cool technology. And it wasn't until Clarion, and it wasn't until I read Ted Chiang that I realized you could do both.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I went to Clarion, because Ted was teaching. So that was when my writing got a lot better. And I had been publishing in a lot of places, including some of the cool literary magazines that I really loved, like the Minnesota Review.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, at the end of the day, that's those places, they don't pay you anything, and they have very small readerships, and they're prestigious to a certain, like, slice of the writer population. But, you know, compared to the stuff, the sort of response I get to stories that come out in Lightspeed or Clark's World and the huge volume of people who read and respond to them is like, you know, it's so different. And so it's so much better over here.
You know, it's so on that other side. It's like at last. Because I know that one of the things that, like I said, I joke about this all the time, but I'm dead serious when I said this. Like, our first day we had Jeffrey Ford was our teacher, and he made us write a story before we even came to Clarion.
It's 1,000 words.
No, it was, but he made it 500.
Oh.
It was 500.
Okay.
Because he said, I don't want 499, I don't want 501, I want exactly 500 words.
Wow.
And then not only when we came in, he made us get up and read them in front of everybody. Wow. So mind you, this is like the first day, you know, these new people, you know, me and Sam and Ruby had just gotten to her apartment, we're still trying to figure out, because you know, before you get into Clarion, they give you like this private blog, so you're kind of talking to each other like a couple of months before you get there.
Right.
And of course, you're looking to see like, oh, I wonder who, you know, will be my roommate. And then it was like, they have you fill out a questionnaire about, you know, here's some of the things like you can't tolerate or which you can't have as a roommate. And I just remember two things, and I'm blessed. I don't know if because They just said, just give her what she wants, because she's the only black chick in the class. Just make her happy. But it was like, when I saw Sam's picture, it was a picture of Sam in water, and his Wanty's hand was, it was like Sam was swimming in an ocean, and he's like looking back scared, and it's like this random hand that's coming out to grab him, almost like a horror movie scene. Huh. And I thought, I like this guy. This is someone who has a sense of humor, right. And he appreciates scary movies.
Like, he's got a bit of whimsy.
He's got a bit of whimsy in him. I'm like, I wonder if I can get this guy. And then I saw Ruby's picture. I think Ruby's a picture of her like diving. She does a lot of scuba diving. Mm-hmm. So it was like a cool picture of her. And you know how Ruby is. Ruby also has this smirk on her face. Mm-hmm. Like, Ruby will be looking at you, but sometimes if you don't know, she's making fun of you in her mind, or she's plotting
you.
She's murdering you, or she's plotting how to what have you. So she had this look, and I just thought to myself, those are the two people, like, if I could have somebody, like, those are the two people I want. Mm-hmm. And I remember they gave us the keys, and they were like, here's your apartment keys. All right. And I was like, oh, who's got the key? I got the two people I wanted. Not that I didn't love everybody else in my class.
So you didn't know?
No, we didn't know.
Oh, okay.
We just fill out the thing. Like, some of the questions were like, what are some things? Like, are you a late sleeper? Like, do you grind your teeth at night? You know, are you a morning person? Right. Do you smoke? Do you what have you? And they just said, what are some tendencies? I think I just wrote down one of the random things I wrote down. I'm like, well, do you sleep in pajamas? Do you walk around naked? And I'm just like, well, I do sleep nude at times sometimes. And I thought, if that's going to be an issue sometimes, walking around naked, right. You know, if people, you know, or if we're going to the bathroom because we're sharing a communal bathroom. Right. If no one care. And I was like, I really don't care, as long as people like clean up after themselves, right. And leave me the fuck alone. I mean, and don't talk. I said, I'm the type of, I said, give me somebody who's not offended if I don't talk to them before 12 o'clock. Because I'm like, I don't want to hear no shit. I don't want to say hi. I don't want to have no conversations. I need to have that quiet, like, you know, coming into the world. Right. That kind of thing.
It has to be meditative.
Yeah, it's that. It's and it's the intro. Like, I don't need to be. And they gave me the perfect people, because these bitches, they would go in and write for hours, and we wouldn't say shit. We could be in the same room together and not say shit.
Part of it was that the apartments were mostly gender aligned. So like, mostly it was like three girls, three boys. So I think they stuck the gay guy with the two extra girls.
Were we the only one?
I think so.
Really?
So I was thinking about that when you
what? It wasn't because I got what I wanted and because I had put a spell.
No, it was totally because of that. I'm sorry. Okay. I never said any of that.
My magic didn't work.
Cut that.
My magic didn't work. Like the sage, I've been like, please let me get the people whose picture. And here's the thing though, because I was worried. I was like, because sometimes pictures be lying to bitches.
Right.
All the time.
And sometimes people
it's airbrushed
be
and shit, and people be making up fake shit. What
and
the
sometimes
hell?
People lie in their bios, because a lot of people say, oh, I'm this and this, and you meet them and I'm like, you are totally not what you said you were.
That is not it.
That is. That is not what that was. You use a damn lie.
Right.
but they were. And so, and the thing about it is, even now when we go to conventions together, like every, like, I think we've gone to something, all of us, three of us together, at least every year. Like, we were at ICFA together this year. We were at WISCON together. We always share our hotel room together. And we go right into the same mode, which is basically, we don't got to talk. We'll talk. I'm not saying we need to sit in there just like non-social, but there's no need. Like, if I come into the hotel room, someone could be sitting there reading or napping, and I don't have to, like, hey, I'll just do my thing, whatever. And it's very comfortable. So
Sam, are you in New York or are you here?
He's in New York. Okay. He's a New Yorker. He rides
Brooklyn,
a bicycle.
Manhattan.
Like Broadway and 200th Street.
Yes.
Like
you overlook the Citadel. The Citadel?
The Cloisters.
The Cloister. Whatever that shit is over there. All I know is I look at your apartment window, I'm like, oh, there's a forest. There's a medieval forest over there. And it looks like a castle.
Yeah, which evidently John Rockefeller, like, tore down like a dozen different castles in Europe to reassemble to make the Cloisters like tower. And
it's very
and late at night there's like one window that's always lit up, and I think of it as like the ghost of like a medieval scribe who suddenly woke up and he's in New York. like the bricks that they took from that castle like had the ghost in them, and so he's like up in the middle of the night writing shit, and he's like, what the fuck is going on
out there? So yeah, so anyway, and he respects, and one thing I love about Sam is as a writer, he also respects introverts. Because there's times I'll sit there and we'll hang out together and we just don't say anything. And I always feel like, I hope Sam understands, because sometimes I don't feel like talking. And Sam is just very comfortable. Cam's like, you know, he's like, do you? What makes you happy? That kind of thing. And like I said, when we had to read our stories, you know, out loud, and it was like, you know, when you go through Clarion and you have like six or seven people and they're reading their shit and you're just like, fuck. I got to bring my A game for real. Like, these fuckers, like, I thought I got in because I'm really good, or, you know, I got, and I'm just like, damn it, these people, like, you feel inspired to bring your shit, like, that you level up.
Yeah. But see, that's the thing I like a lot about reading show stories in, you know, some of these top magazines, like you mentioned, like Cockroach
and
Lightspeed too, is that you do get inspired and you do learn a lot without having to like do the commitment of reading a novel.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's, you know, there's always some story that just makes you go, fuck, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah, that's what's so important as a writer. I feel like you should always be reading, and you should be reading like awesome stuff that makes you go, fuck.
Right.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, there's just not as many magazine outlets. Like you said, so many great magazines have folded, and I miss people respecting short stories because there's so much great stuff that's out there. You know, I mean, I'm really excited that Ted Chiang's short story got made to a movie.
New York Times bestseller.
So we'll see. You know what happens in terms of that. So
getting to
Clarion, you start. I mean, the first year out, I think the following year you won the Shirley Jackson Award. I must say I was there in the audience when he won.
That's true.
And I was like, yay!
What was that story for? What was that?
The story was called 57 Reasons for the Slate Quarry Suicides, which was the first pro sale I made after Clarion, which actually was a year. It was a full year. It was like actually during Clarion 2013, I sold that one. And that first year was fucking rough because you're at Clarion and you're surrounded by amazing writers and people who are just super passionate about writing and reading science fiction and fantasy and horror. And it's amazing. And then you go home and you're like, well...
Where you can actually focus all day and write.
You can, except that you don't have cool people to hang out with and to bounce off of and to feel part of a really awesome community. Mm-hmm. So that was a really rough year of writing a lot of stories that didn't go anywhere. And, you know, when I finally did sell one, I was lucky enough to win an award for it. And, you know, I had written it as a science fiction story. I submitted it to a science fiction magazine. I thought it was a science fiction story, but the editor was like, I want this for my horror magazine. And I was like, well, I don't know how I feel about that. but then it won an award for horror. So I'm like, all right, I guess you know better than me.
Okay,
call it what you want.
It's okay, hey.
If tone moves you in a freaky way.
You got to listen to that. And then after that, it was like, it seemed like you had stories that were coming out. And then this book. Because I got to remember, he sat on it for a long time. It's like, these motherfuckers are going to get some book deals. Because it was like, right after the other, Carmen Maria Machado. Hey, Carmen, who's in our class? Go get her book also.
Shout out to the fact that her book came out on a Tuesday, and then on a Wednesday of that same week was a finalist for the National Book Award.
Okay, bitch. So, come on. You know. You know.
And she is that good. You should definitely
get her book. She sold a story in the middle of our third week of Clarion.
And we were in workshop.
In the workshop.
And she was like this.
She's a text.
She was like, oh my God. She has just sold her first, made her first pro sale.
And we were, and then the looks on our face. I remember walking down the stairwell, looking at the back of your head like, damn.
I felt some type of way.
I did. I was like, that's right. We were on our way.
I'm so happy for you.
What? I just remember going down the steps going, shit, it's like that. I mean, I heard rumors and stuff, and I heard stories of people like, I think the only person I ever heard about doing that really was like Ted Chiang. And it was just like, for you to be like, oh, she just, and you're walking down the steps. I'm like, God damn it.
How long is the program?
6 weeks.
So yeah, so The Art of Starving. Like I said, you're on the book tour. You're talking to different people about this book. Can you tell us a little bit about what the book is about? Because I know people are wondering. Because my mom is reading it, and every few minutes she would be calling me like, "Did this really happen to Sam?" That's when I knew the writing is really good. When my mom, like every other hour, she's reading it, she's like, "Did this really happen? I feel so sad right now. Like, did this really happen?" I said, "Mom, first of all, it's a science fiction fantasy book.
It's inspired.
It's inspired by
Sam. Does not have superpowers.
Sam does not have superpowers.
Whoa. You did fly in here earlier, though. Huh?
That's true. That's true." I like to try to, you know, not brag on that too much.
Right.
You know, I'm like Clark Kenting it over here. Sorry.
But tell us about the book, and we're going to get into like what's happening with it now.
Awesome. So the elevator pitch is that it is about a bullied small town gay boy with an eating disorder, all of which I was, who believes that starving himself awakens latent supernatural abilities, which mine did not. And he uses them to embark on a mission of bloody revenge against his bullies and the people who he thinks caused his sister to run away from home.
So it's Carrie in West Hollywood, right?
It's Carrie.
That's exactly how I pitched it to my agent. I was like, I wrote a book.
Hey, I mean, that's the book. Hey, Jeff Thorne just walked in. Hey, Jeff.
What's up, people?
Jeff is fam. Didn't I tell you it's like gay? It's gay care. Yeah. So it's like it has all the elements that I love. So you've got like the science fiction aspect, you kind of got the horror elements, and you've got like that kind of social, you know, angst of a young person, you know, outlier, that kind of thing.
Hand that to Jeff so you can look at.
So tell us more. The reception.
So, you know, it got some really good reviews, and I've been really happy with it. One weird thing that happened that I hadn't really anticipated was, or I had sort of thought about it, was that a lot of people responded really negatively to the synopsis and when it was announced, because they were saying that it sounded like it romanticized or glamorized eating disorders. Mm-hmm. And so I had been really clear with my agent and my editor that this was coming from a place of personal experience, but I wasn't really prepared to, like, tell everybody in the world that. Mm-hmm. But then I felt like I had to, because a lot of people were thinking that it was more exploitative,
right,
I think.
Right,
and
right.
So I felt like it was important to sort of engage those voices and talk to people and be like, look, especially if you're a survivor, I get that this is a tough topic to talk about, and you might be triggered, and I respect that. And here's how it comes from my experience and why I don't think I'm being exploitative. And not that means I got it 100% right, or that my experience maps to yours, because mm-hmm. it will never do that 100%. But this is what I was trying to dramatize. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, feeling like I had to change my Twitter bio to include eating disorder survivor and just put it out there to a much greater extent than I'm comfortable with. But,
right.
But also, like, you know, I felt like I've gotten a ton of amazing responses from other survivors who are like saying that it validates parts of their experience that no one ever understood
or got.
So it's been a great reception. It's mm-hmm. been, you know, it's the kind of book that is not, I don't think, blockbuster material. I don't think it's bestseller material. It's like, it is super messed up. It has a romance between a gay Jewish and a gay Muslim boy. Like, I think that it's, it checks off a lot of things that for a lot of people is a deal breaker or, you know, not a, I need this book in my life.
He's just trying not to win.
Okay.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's the downside of writing the dark, twisted shit that everyone tells you not to write is, right. you know, it's not going to resonate with people the way The Hunger Games does, but mm-hmm. you know,
I mean, okay, look, I'm gonna say this. Like, I think that when people write material that disturbs people, I think there's always something of extra value about that, because a lot of times people don't want to tell stories that are disturbing, that they want, you know, novels and movies and stuff to be this place of comfort that we go to escape our own kind of shit going on in our life.
Right.
But see, I think what you're saying is that, and people who are survivors of this and survive, I mean, who respond to and reach out to you, it's like they see some way of like putting their experience into perspective right. that maybe they never could articulate
right.
and that helps them. And I think that's what makes certain kind of material so valid, because that's, I think on that's why you watch movies and TV and read books
right.
to get that kind of like understanding.
Yep.
And that's, and I think that as the world is like continuing to get more and more fucked up with shit, or it's being discussed more,
right.
you know, like you want to see stuff and read stuff that speaks to you in some way, so you don't feel like I'm totally alone in this situation and no one can understand it, you know? Because
yeah.
obviously if you went through something and then could write it out in a way that your editors and everyone were like, okay, this is going to be good, then it's, you know, it's speaking to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it didn't, if they were like, oh, it's too singular,
right.
there wouldn't be a hardback in front of us right now.
Okay. Okay.
It'd be in the trunk with the other
guys. Okay.
We'll just put it online.
We'll get your little ebook right. and then we'll see how it goes then. And, you know, maybe print on demand, perhaps.
I mean, to that point, I feel like what's disturbing for one person is validating and enlightening and affirming for other people. And so there's some people that I want to validate and affirm, and there's other people who I want to disturb. There's you know, people should be more disturbed than they are. You
mm-hmm.
know, like, I feel like there's a, you know, I can, you know, laugh at a stupid comedy as much as the next person, and I mm-hmm. agree that there's a value in providing entertainment that takes people out of their fucked up lives, and we're living in a super fucked up world. And I'm all about that. But I also think that if people were more disturbed and more upset, the world would be less fucked up, because we would be more like, you know, doing something about the stuff that disturbs us more.
Right. So this week, since you've been out here from New York, work. You've met with your book agent and you've met with your TV film agent. First of all, tell us how you got your, because I know how you got your book agent. And since we're dealing with like screenwriting and writing that aspect, tell us about how you got your TV film agent and how that meeting went this week. Only tell us what you can.
Sure, sure.
And just make sure that if it does get picked up an option that, you know, since I'm your girl.
They went that away. Got your line in the script already.
Who has lived with you in an apartment and who, whenever we go to conventions, we share the same hotel room and we sit there and look at each other and get snarky. Tell us how that happened and what was the meeting like this week.
So I have an amazing literary agent named Seth Fishman at the Gurnert Company, and he, like a lot of literary agents, was New York based, but then he moved to LA for his wife's. His wife got, I think she's in doc. She's at school, in medical school, and I felt very sad. I have the sort of like instinctive, obligatory New Yorker antipathy towards LA of like, that place scares me. So I felt sad.
What's Jeff doing back there?
If walls could talk, right?
Yeah, no, it goes both ways, and I respect and celebrate that. You know, there's lots in both places to be to make fun of. I felt very sad, and so. So I don't know if this was like Seth trying to make me feel better or this was just him being a good agent, but he connected me with my agent at APA, and you know, she read The Art of Starving and my adult science fiction novel called Blackfish City, which is coming out next year.
What's it called? Black what?
Blackfish City.
Great name. Love that.
Thank you. That was like
Jeff
the sixth.
He gave a fist, but I think it was fish.
Awesome. It was like the sixth title, but it's the one we're going with, so I'm really happy with it.
Speaking of titles, I want to make sure I put on the record that one of the stories that he got nominated with the Nebula Award, one of the stories, when he was first putting the story out and putting it together, he had went on Facebook and asked all the peeps, what title should I put out? And he gave us a couple of titles. And I tell you, damn near 90% of the people chose the wrong title. And I think it was me and one of your other black friend who said, bitch, go with this title. Because the other one, because you know how I am about titles that kind of like are kind of pretentious and like doing a bit much. It was doing a bit much. And I said, I'm always like simplicity. Give me that visual. So what was the name of it? It was
the pretentious title was Ice is the Truth of Water.
Okay. And the title that we went with, because
poetic.
Lisa said, don't do that.
Right. The title we went with was Calved.
Yes.
Which, it didn't get nominated for a Nebula Award, but it did get in it did get in three Best of the Year anthologies. So what I'm trying to say is the secret of my success, the wind beneath my wings, is Lisa Bolacaccia.
I just had to say that.
Any good decisions I've made.
The only reason why, because everybody kept giving all their reasons and people were just like, and I always tell people, it's like, look, you want a title that one is going to pique curiosity. Number two, kind of give you a little bit what the story might be about. Right. And with Calved, I feel like most people don't know what that is.
Yeah,
so they're going to be like, well, what the fuck is that? Right. And it's short and to the point, and it's like, let me read the story. Now, if you would have had the other one, it's like, it sounds very literary. And had I gone in with, I usually, because, you know, I always get the best of science fiction and horror ones. And even though, God forbid, a lot of our friends that we know sometimes do those titles where I'm just like, no, because it's too much. Don't do that. But I'm just saying, titles matter. And I'm just so happy that me and the 5% that said, don't do that one, and you went with the right choice. You were on the right side of history.
Yes, indeed. That's Lisa's side.
All right,
all
that's my side.
So
you came here and met with the literary agent.
You know, they are super excited about it and pitching it in a bunch of places. And she told me she had like the classic Hollywood experience of going to a meeting and pitching The Art of Starving, and an executive being like, oh my God, I love it. It's amazing. I want it. Does he have to be gay?
Here we go.
Sam,
yeah.
Welcome to Hollywood.
Yeah. Welcome to Hollywood.
Yep. I was like, that's why I'm in New York.
We've all had that. Does he have to be black?
Does it have to be black? Does it have to be a woman? Does it have to be? Yes.
Yes.
She'd be Charlize Theron.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So you know, and I felt very, very like special and important because I went, when I went to the meeting, like Ben Wyatt from Parks and Recreation was like in the next meeting pitching to a bunch of suits. And I'm like, oh my God, there's famous people. Right, right. which I know that's not the actor's name, but I only know the character's name. Right. So yeah, it was a fun meeting. I mean, I take a very cynical, look at Hollywood, like I am, and movies, because while I am like obsessed with movies and I'm a total cinephile, I'm a writer, I'm a novelist, and that's where my focus is. That's where I want to be. And so, mm-hmm. if a movie happens, that's amazing. Right. That's going to help me sell books. That's going to, you know, bring me to a wider audience. But that's not my focus, and that's not what I need to happen. So I'm going in there being like, this is fun. This is like a life coach because you're telling me how awesome I am, mm-hmm. and how everybody loves me. And you know, talk to you in 6 months. Like it's cool.
Right.
So I'm really excited and happy.
So they got you on a little water bottle tour right now? You kind of touring around a little bit?
Yeah, a little bit. And by they, I mean me. this is the most bootleg tour ever. This is okay. I called up bookstores.
Yes.
And I was like, can I come?
Right, right.
And I did have a friend in San Francisco who set up a couple of events, but it's very much like, you know, Harper Teen, love them to death. If you're not one of their biggest authors, they do not put they can't afford to put the kind of resources into every author, or they put them on tour. So I was like, I need to make a tour happen if it's going to happen.
Right.
And I want to see Lisa and other cool people.
And other cool people.
And it was my first time back in San Diego since Clarion, and it was really emotional and like, oh my God, this is where I was born.
He was riding his bicycle everywhere. And I think, you know, we went to Mysterious Galaxy Bookstore. Hi, in San Diego. I had his book reading. A lot of our Clarion peeps came and hung out, brought my mom, and my mom was just like, oh, and it's Sam. And she's like, oh, and I'm like, oh my God, mom, please calm yourself. Calm down, mother. And of course, having lunch and hanging out. So that's it's always good. And of course, you know, we were driving on the freeway. So we had just gone. We were on our way to go see Blade Runner. And literally, he had rode his bicycle from was it Sweetwater High School?
Yeah.
All the way to the other side of town where I usually hang out, where my Lestat's bookstore is. And he's like getting in the car, and it was like having a little puppy in the car because he rolled down the windows and was like sticking his head out.
He was hot.
No.
I know I stink.
No. You weren't doing it for that. He was like actually breathing in the air, like the beach air and stuff. And he was like taking pictures, and like even in the daytime we were coming back, you know, or just going somewhere, right? You were just like sticking your head out, looking, and air. And I'm just like,
I can be.
He lives in New York. I was hardly ever get in a car.
It's not just that. That is true. But the other thing is, I can be real about the fact that as much as I love New York, New York does not smell good. Right? Like San Diego smells like eucalyptus and jasmine and freedom. And New York smells like urine and bus exhaust and covfefe.
Eucalyptus. Wait. San Diego smells like friendship and magic.
Like New
York
puppies.
Okay. New York smells like that.
You know what comes to mind is that shot in The Dark Knight when Joker he's still in the police car and his head's out the window.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. It was so cute. It's like, oh, Sam. But no, he was just like, I totally get it, because it's like, it was one of those experiences. And like, if you've ever been to San Diego and the really nice parts of San Diego, it's a really beautiful city. And it's like, I had to leave San Diego to live in LA to really appreciate, go back. Like, it took me 11 years and then go back and like, oh yeah,
I do that when I go to San Francisco.
This place is pretty cool.
I grew up in San Francisco. Whenever I go back, I'm like,
I love San Francisco.
Oh, wow, it's so, besides expensive.
Right.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Right.
And it's full of straight people now.
Yeah.
And it's like three gay people. Right.
It used to be gay people and artists, and now it's Twitter people.
Okay.
Right? People who work at Facebook.
Right. Like, people who can afford to live there.
People gentrified it. Exactly. Now, speaking of which, because one of the things that's been going on in some of the science fiction that's been going on in fiction and in movies and stuff like that is, because of the state of the world is so bizarre world right now, mm-hmm. Sam and, like I said, we went and saw Blade Runner 2049, and I did a little Twitter thread about it, because one of the things I'm notorious for is like, when stuff is going on in a movie and I feel like I need to tell the person next to me what I am feeling right now.
I was Twitter for you.
He was Twitter for me. We're literally, I just leaned next to him. First of all, shout out to Arclight La Jolla for having butter. I'm still bitter about this, Sam.
You put butter in your popcorn?
No, listen. No. No.
Oh, what are you talking about?
Listen, I'm just... Buttergate happened a couple
years ago.
When did... Listen.
Not butter. Parquet? I mean, what was...
Real butter. Real butter. When did Hateful Eight come out?
Oh, God. 2 years ago.
Two years ago.
That's it?
Two years ago. me and my one of my besties, Todd, we went to go see The Hateful Eight. We went to go see the 70mm, the whole big thing. It was my first time going to the Arclight La Jolla. I've always gone to the Arclight, but it's like, oh, let me go to La Jolla one. So I get there, fabulous, you know, the nice part, you know, the richy part of town in La Jolla. Oh, Arclight, you go up the little escalator, like, oh, we're here. You know, it's the Arclight, you know, liquor, food, grown folk. To me, Arclight is like, you're only paying extra because you don't be fucking with nobody's babies.
Right.
You don't want to be no teens.
I'm loving assigned seating.
Yeah, you know, assigned seating. And it's like grown folks who appreciate cinema who are going to spend that extra. And they don't be, you know, just people who serious about their films. So when you serious about your film, people. And I'm coming
one
to see a movie. And
is
you know it's a Tarantino. Listen. Listen. You already know it's a Tarantino movie. So you know it's going to be long as hell.
Right.
70mm.
Listen. Listen. I can't be sitting there like 11 o'clock in the morning with my glass of wine.
11 o'clock.
Listen, it'll be like 2 o'clock in the afternoon by the time that movie's done. So it's 6 o'clock somewhere in the world. All right?
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Listen, listen. Got there the night. We went the night before. And what happened was it got sold out. So we bought our tickets like, hey, no problem. Next day, come in there. We're ready. We're good to go. We're ready to go. Got my getting the popcorn. The girl goes, oh, there's no butter. She handed me the popcorn thing.
Noise.
And I said, ain't no butter. Why did you not say anything before? I'm not paying for this popcorn. Like, we give my cash back right now. And I said, when did you, and I'm thinking, it's only like 11 o'clock. When did you guys run out of butter?
Oh,
she said,
night,
she goes, yeah, yesterday, last night. I said, y'all didn't think that people today would want some butter?
Yeah,
she's like, I'm so sorry. Listen, y'all, I was so salty.
You know what? It's too early
like,
for
bitch,
butter.
There's a safe
no, it's not.
Go give me some butter.
No, it's too early. Listen, listen. I said to
butter,
I said, y'all can't run nobody down.
Right.
I was like getting real black. You can't run nobody down.
Put in the microwave and melt the shit.
You can't run down to the Trader Joe's and get the butter and microwave it and make this happen. Like, come here. Come. Look, I was blackity black. Go run me my butter right now.
Give it to me, bitch. I'll do it. I'll do
so
it.
So I went in. And so here's the thing. I'm thinking, and so here's Todd, because God bless you. Todd is my best. She's like, well, Lisa, maybe by the intermission they'll get some butter. Maybe it hasn't, because it's early. We can always, there's going
to
be a 20 minute.
Shipment comes
listen,
at 12.
The good thing is there's going to be a 20 minute intermission. You can go back out. You can get another glass
Trader
of wine. The butter should be there. So in my mind, I'm sitting there watching this Tarantino movie going, it's so beautiful. It's so pretty. Wait, why are we going indoors now?
Right.
All this beautiful scenery and 70 millimeter and you bragging about 70
millimeter. Why are we in the stagecoach for 40
why
minutes?
Are we inside? Why are we inside a building for, and I was so I was already like petty anyway.
Because he's not David Lean. That's why you're
listen.
Inside.
Listen, so I was always sitting there like, damn it, there ain't no butter. And of course, Taj buys the popcorn with no butter. So she meanwhile, so I got the smell of popcorn.
Right.
No popcorn. So I got the intermission going, hey, so did we get any butter? And she was just like, no. And I was just like, I hate you all. And I just stood outside the intermission sipping on wine. And was just so it ruined the movie experience for me.
Right.
So I told Sam as we're walking up to go see Blade Runner, I said, Sam.
Which I booked, you know, I was like, let's go here. I didn't get the backstory until we were in the theater already. So I'm sorry. I would never.
No, no. I just told Sam, we're about to go up the escalator. I said, let me tell you about Buttergate, Sam. I had to warn him. See, I'm a good friend. I let you know. It's like, I might have a fit. So I'm going to let you know what's going on before we get up in here.
This is my true love.
Yes.
You know,
listen,
you know nice, Lisa. You
listen.
Don't know that bitch right
and
there.
So when I came in, I said, oh, is there butter? And so thank you, because Sam was the one who bought, he bought me my popcorn and he bought me my soda while I went to the restroom. And I was like, oh, and she layered the butter. She gave me a lot of butter. I think
she's
they
like,
had.
I've heard about you.
Behind,
she got
I
her picture
you,
on the wall.
I bet you behind that counter is
a
photo. And I said, if you see this woman, these dreadlocks walk up in there, y'all better go run her butter.
We're in the safe. There's emergency butter for when Lisa
whole,
comes.
Give her a whole bottle of wine if you need to.
We got a buzzer in the
okay.
office if you show up.
So, yeah.
Lisa.
So originally, I told Sam this. Originally, I had no intent of really going to go see Blade Runner because I just thought, oh, Ryan Gosling, oh, it just looks. But a part of me, because I love the original Blade Runner, even though it has its problems, I've seen all the different versions of it. There's just something about the sci-fi head in me that just appreciates anything that has to do with futurism and just, you know, artificial intelligence. I figure I have to go and pay my respects. I wanted to go see it because I felt like this might be the one time somebody, a new director, maybe the new director will put something new and amazing. I mean, he did Arrival and I really liked Arrival. You know, you know, it might be something I don't want to miss. And so the reason why we went to Arclight, because it was the widescreen, and right. So we get in there. So we get in there. By my count, in that big-ass theater, would you say about maybe 20 people?
Not even.
Okay, 10.
And we were stressing out, like, are these our seats? Are these our seats? Listen, Lisa, it doesn't matter. There's no one in here.
I go, Sam, we're F89. Mind you, me being polite, Lisa.
Make no money.
Listen, wow. Let me tell you. We walked in there, because I'm thinking, oh, blah, 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 because I see a lot of people walking that way. So I'm assuming, oh, it's going to be whatever.
It's going to be a line.
It's going to be whatever. Right. And I was like, and I walked in there, and like you said, I'm sitting there like, are we F8? And literally Sam was like, bitch, we can sit anywhere in here. Stop stressing over F8, F9. And it wasn't until I sat down, I'm like, damn, we really could have just sat anywhere we wanted to. Okay, maybe 10 people?
Probably.
Maybe 10 people? Right. Okay.
I mean, it was a Tuesday night. It was a Tuesday night. It was 7:30.
Oh, I thought you were going on Saturday. No. You know, but.
No, it was a
Tuesday? This past Tuesday?
Yeah. Okay.
I thought, you know. Right. And I told Sam as we're walking and looking at the poster, I said, yeah, I was listening to National Public Radio and I was looking at their ads. They're bragging about the number one movie worldwide. Normally they say they're number one movie in America. Right. It didn't even make, I think they were projecting 40 million. Did it even make 30?
It made 30.
Happy Death Day knocked it out of the box in its second week.
A horror movie.
So you know, a horror movie,
a low budget horror movie knocked it out, like out the box. I kind of had an inkling it was because, you know, and I don't know.
That came
reason
out of nowhere. I didn't hear nothing about it. I usually know about all the horror.
Oh, Happy Look, you didn't know about Happy Death Day? You didn't see those commercials running? Anyway, so, you know.
I saw.
Yeah. But, you know, they're bragging about the number one movie in the world. And when they say that's because they got the movie in China. And because a lot of people outside of America, they eat up anything that's American Hollywood anyway. And you got like a bunch of people watching that. So they're going to make
it. I don't think it's played in China.
Whatever it was, it said number one in the world.
Yeah, I mean, it opened in some places. I mean, look, I feel, you know, the movie has, I think, three issues with the movie, I think. So one, it's way too expensive.
What they spend on it, how much?
But do you feel like, you and Sam, both of you, the three of us seen this movie. Do you feel like, do you feel like that $300 million was on the screen?
No. Well, yes, but that's the problem. See, the thing is this. Someone did a calculation. The original film cost $27 million in 82. Which is
about what, 60 today or something?
They said it was like 75 today.
Okay. Right.
Okay. Yeah. So you don't really want to spend more than that.
Right.
Because the movie was a flop when it came out. It's very difficult to find people to agree upon what version is the version they like the most. Right. And the people who haven't seen the movie don't know what version to see.
Right.
So that's a big problem. Two, casting. Casting was absolutely aggressively disrespectful.
Damn.
You said aggressively
to LA.
Okay.
To the original film.
Okay.
To the original film.
Yes.
Because there was a really interesting video I saw about 2 years ago where this guy from England was saying, if you look at this movie, Blade Runner.
The original.
Okay. It kind of appears that all the white people are on the off world colonies, right. And it's only and the people who are left in this who are left on the ground
are the colored folk,
are the colored people.
Uh-huh.
And if you go back and look at the movie, that's kind of what happens.
Mm.
And you go look back at this movie, and it's like there's no one black, there's no one Asian, there's no one Latino in any substantial role.
Really?
And positions of power, you know, or anything.
They gave Edward James almost one scene, which is criminal, where Lisa said why they got him looking like Colonel Sanders.
No,
he looked like he was selling a two-piece bucket.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but what was worse was he's speaking English.
Yes!
And the thing is, in the other
movie,
he's speaking the gutter speech.
Yes.
And I'm like, he would never speak English.
He was speaking
English.
That pigeon,
you
yes.
fucked that up so bad.
Yes.
That I was like, you know what? Why? And to me, the worst casting is Jared Leto.
Yeah. Really?
Because number one, he doesn't bring anything to the movie. Number two, like, two sentences into every time he speaks, I'm like, I don't care what you say.
Damn.
Because it's so like esoteric and it doesn't have anything to do with anything.
Yeah. It's super poetic.
I was like, what are you doing? That's not cool. Now, to me, it would have been really dope if you got Viola Davis to play that role. And this is why, because he's playing the Tyrell character, right?
Right.
he's the one who's giving, like, I'm going to give birth to these new type of people, right? Mm-hmm. If you had a black woman in that role,
listen,
the kind of like deep kind of like
the subtext of Lucy, yes,
of all that being said, and then on top of that, this is the thing that I have not seen in a science fiction movie that deals with robots that are used as an indentured servant class is somebody black charged with hunting them down. Because a black person hunting down a slave, what does that say? That would be so cool to see, because they didn't do it in iRobot, and they could have done it in this, and they didn't do it. And I was like, you guys keep dropping the ball.
Right.
It could be really, really cool.
Right.
And everyone's kind of fucking up.
Can I just say that all those points, because when I looked at Sam, the first things I kept saying was, you know, after we discussed it, we went and ate at Denny's. We went to a 24-hour Denny's and sat there, and we ate, and then we just started, like, debriefing, like, well, what did you think? And, you know, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, I gave it a 6. And the 6 was only for the score and just the pretty visuals.
The score? Okay. I thought the score ruined the movie.
No, I did not. The score was the only thing.
Jeff said you're harsh.
Look, I'm usually not harsh on anything. I'm usually not that harsh on anything. But I'm letting you know
that this score is going to get nominated. You mark my word. You want to bet $5?
Anything. I love the score, but you know, shit gets nominated.
That's true.
To me, the Vangelis score in the original is as seminal to that world as the John Williams scores are to the Raiders and to the Star Wars movie. If you don't even like the half-assed attempts that they use to
Hans drop Zimmer that in and there, the other dude is giving an homage. To the original.
It's just like, and to me, the biggest mistake of the movie is there's no Roy Batty character.
Yeah.
And I feel that if you look at Blade Runner, much like Star Wars movies, if you don't have a good villain, then you,
because in the movie
Jared
you don't
Leto
really
was a disappointing
yeah
villain.
And you don't really know who the villain. I mean, the villain
actually
no
the badass lady robot was awesome.
The robot was awesome,
but she should have been Latino, and it would have been a lot cooler.
Of course, yeah.
Now
she should have been the Blade Runner,
or
a Latino Blade Runner.
Well, she should have been. She should have been. But see, the
y'all
thing.
Y'all got pens.
I'm working. I'm working on stuff. I'm just saying this. See, to me, it's just casting. Because in terms of like a business thing, if you cast this differently, I guarantee you it makes more money.
It would make a grip. Because the way the movie plays, it's the same thing. It's like the people in positions of power, people who have the most big, they were all white people. Like even the white women, there was a variety of white women, and I say variety, I mean in accents and costumes. Right. That's about as much variety as you're going to get.
Complete absence of variety.
Okay, absence of variety. Okay. Okay.
Says the white guy, right. By the way.
And then on top of that, how you fuck you gonna kill Robin Wright?
You talking about Wonder Woman?
Robin Wright is in.
Both.
She plays the Captain Bryant character in this movie, and I'm like, that's not cool. What are you doing
in her office?
And then
throw it in the garbage can.
No. The part that got me the most was they go to that orphanage.
Right.
It's all white kids
and
Lenny in
James,
orphanage.
And it's the head
it's
guy.
It's all white kids in orphanage. I'm like, there's no Latino kid. There's no Latin kid. There's no
there was Indian a couple
kid,
of suspect no, that could have been
nobody,
coded maybe.
I just felt like it was such a betrayal to what the other movie was, which was so fascinating. And see, there's a point that I can a contention about the original film that I tell people why I like the theatrical cut. With the
voiceover,
because there's two really, really important lines that are said in the voiceover there that you would never know.
The nigga line. Yep.
Captain Bryan said,
"What did he say?"
Okay, he says, Captain Bryan, he's the type of cop in history books who called black men niggers. Really? Now that's letting you know, because it's all talking about in the past tense, that level of racial animosity on
it's
the police
still,
is
right.
gone. Right. It's gone because it's in the past.
Right.
It's so it's kind of saying the world has moved past that moment. And you don't have that if you don't have that line.
Right. And the subtext of that, as an audience member watching that, you're like, It's still happening. So maybe in the future there's some hope for us.
Exactly. Yes.
Maybe there's some hope for us.
Either those cops don't get allowed to be on the force because of some psych evaluation, or society's moved past.
Right. And they try
to send them to outer space.
Right. And they try to like give a you know, because they call the people who the Blade Runner skin jobs, and they basically tell them like, you know, there's a scene where he's walking in the cop's office, and the other cops are like mad at him and just like treat him with disrespect and kind of like prejudice against him, to kind of give an idea like, oh, these particular characters, you know, are
podcast bomb. Also, in the original film, when you look at Los Angeles, dark, rainy, messed up Los Angeles, all the extras are multi-ethnic.
Yes.
Right. All of them.
All of them.
Asian, Latin, Black. There's not. It's thrown away, though. It's not. There's no point made of it.
Right.
And then the only point it's made is when the Almost character shows up and he's speaking, from our point of view, another language.
Right.
But English is the gutter language.
Yeah.
So if in the future you have a new language, that's the new English, based on all these people. They'd have to make a big deal about it.
It could have been so easily fixed. Easily fixed.
Yeah. I mean, there's a level on which the original feels like it's like a post-American future, where like Japanese and Russian and Bengali are like everywhere. And, you know, the sort of American dominance is sort of over, and LA feels like a city past its, like, that's like in decline.
Mm-hmm.
But this does not carry that.
Yeah, and it's like, it's very, and like I said, there are a few, you can see a few people of color in the background and stuff like that. But
and
even
come back.
And even in the characters who speak, though, like most of the speaking characters that have real, you know, role are white characters. And the ones that are Black, you know, because there's like two Black characters in there. Mm-hmm. There's I can't remember his name, the Ethiopian actor who was in Captain
Phillips. Phillips. I always forget he's in the movie, but yeah.
Him, Lenny James, if you know him from Walking Dead.
Yes. Small role.
Being villain.
He's being a villain. He's a slave. He's a child slave laborer overseer. The guy in from the Captain
Phillips
movie, which I didn't see because I thought, that looks like trash. And and I knew what was going to happen. As soon as I showed Home Dude, I said, his punchline is going to be like, his line is going to become a punchline and a meme, and it definitely did. Mm-hmm. They had him in a role of being kind of a nefarious character who can get you all the goods. So it's kind of like, I'm kind of like your drug dealer.
Yeah, but
kind of like. And the one Black female they had, who was a light-skinned Black female, she's, of course, the sex worker, you know? So there's your, that's
the one would be.
And Wood Harris was in it too.
Yeah.
Wood Harris had a super, super, super small role.
Yeah, but I didn't even pay attention to him because it was like non.
The corollary to that and the sort of like, you know, bizarre lack of variety in this world is the super, super, super heteronormativity of it.
Yes.
And so there's like, everywhere you look, there's like an inexplicable naked lady statue with like, with like, high heels and fingernails.
Yes.
And there's even a scene where, you know, Ryan Gosling is having sex with these two women, and like they're all voluptuous and taking off their clothes and being all sexy. And I'm like, okay,
here we go. We was ready.
Where Ryan Gosling
we ready.
Off his fucking
we ready.
I see his neck.
I see it. It's coming through.
For this
yes,
part.
We was ready.
Cut to like this rainy streets.
I'm like, bitch. Okay, and I looked at Sam like, ain't this a bitch?
I'm like,
ain't this some shit right here?
And then there's like the sex workers outside. And I'm like, there's
no rent boys
in LA. Like, come
there's,
on. Now.
There's there's like some some super rich woman who's going around picking up young women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people different. You know, non-binary folks. I mean, I would think that kind of scene where sex is so open like that, you would have everybody. I mean, it's an easy fix.
Yeah.
It's an easy. It's just extras. It's just extras. And with the sex, all the ads with the naked women, it's like, have some kind of gender parity and non-binary gender parity. Where's my naked man walking around coming up to me while I'm riding my bicycle going, hey,
excuse me while I whip it out.
Here my penis is hanging out. I mean, because they had the women walking around with the titties all up in the sky, butt naked, asses showing everything. And I'm like, hey. But I'm saying, but none of the ads had any men. They were all women,
but
half
my
naked.
Thing is, why weren't
Where's
they Asian? Because if you remember in the other movie, on all the billboards,
there's
Asian women.
Yeah.
Right. And I was like, okay, so yes, Japan might not be in prominence anymore. Maybe it's China. But what they're saying in that version is that Japan stayed dominant. So it's not following necessarily what is happening with us geopolitically.
Right.
And I just kind of like, you got, and it's like, it's the thing that Jeff said when it came out a minute ago, is that there's all those little moments, and Ridley Scott's so good for this in that movie only, is that the action will happen and the camera will kind of pan off and pick up all this kind of stuff in the background and linger for like maybe a second or two, and then it will cut away.
Right.
And that added this kind of like, you know, something that, what's his name, did in Children of Men, Alfonso Cuarón, where so that the audience gets an understanding of how the world has changed, but it's not necessarily a story point, but it doesn't drag on the story.
Exactly. And it's like you have all these Asian things, like you have their food, their clothing, their hair. Everything has an Asian aesthetic, whether it's from Japan or China or whatever, and you hardly see any Asian. The only time I saw like one specific, I thought, oh my God, there's an Asian person. It was the little girl in one of the scenes where they're like making these memories. And it was like the one Asian girl. I'm like, you ain't got no black kids. It's all white kids. It was like so blatant to me. And like the women. And I, you know me. I'm a freak. And I have no problems with nudity. But it was like, it got to the point where it's like, damn, Dennis, I know you like titties and like, we get it, dude.
It's a total dude fantasy.
It really is.
You're driving a flying car between the mouths of the two naked women who are like,
titties are pointed up to the stars.
It's like,
and then when they had the big old, like, how many high heels do we need to see with these long legs and like vaginas bent over? And I remember I turned to you and I'm like, I started quoting Cardi B. I was like,
damn.
These are expensive shoes. These is red bottoms. These is bloody shoes. And so Sam was like, stop. Like, and then it was like, what, halfway through I was like, Sam, they gotta wrap the shit up. Like, I cannot.
That's the other thing, is like, there's all these problems about
it's over
about its vision of the future. Like, I love a good composition. I'll watch a 90-second shot of the reflection of water rippling on the ceiling. I'll do that. I love it. But most people will not.
Right.
And most people will be bored out of their minds. Right. And there was a lot of that.
Yes.
So I am not surprised that this movie is
why it was long as fuck.
It's long as fuck.
It needs a great editing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm kind of torn. The idea it might make a little voiceover. I mean, they totally miscast everything. There's just so much, and there's things that they could have done to fix it, and it's just, you had an opportunity, and they fucked it up.
To me, I think they feel that, it's my last thing, the voiceover thing is interesting, because if you hadn't seen the original movie.
So there's no voiceover in this movie?
No voiceover. And if you don't, like, dive in the rabbit hole of what the movie is trying to say, and it's never said in the original movie that Deckard is a replicant or not. That's something that's just discerned, and is like,
what?
You know, it's not said.
I'm out. You know, did this movie say he's a replicant?
No.
Okay, because I'm about to go and
No, but
this is probably a whole different.
But they make it seem that's what it is. They make it seem like two replicants had a child. That's kind of what
I didn't get that. I thought it made the case the opposite.
To me, it made the opposite case. It made the case to me that Deckard was actually human.
You better be.
Well, that's what I believe. But some people say no. It's really Scott. And so I'm saying again that so there's a point of contention depending on which version of the film that you want to watch, and then in this movie it's never explained which version they're going with. Are they going with him as a replicant?
That's their biggest
mistake.
That's
the problem, and that to me kind of
one of their many problems.
Like what happens?
Right.
I mean, you know what? I was telling Linnell, it's the last thing.
Are you sure, Chris?
This is what I want to get. I said to myself, what would be really cool. I've only seen this in Clockwork Oranges. What's it like if you condition a human to believe that they're not human?
Right.
And it would have been really cool if Ryan Gosling's character actually was a human and they convinced him that he was a replicant.
Right.
And then he figures out that he's not. That could have been interesting.
That would have been that would have been something for me if it's edited well.
And takes his shirt off.
And it takes his shirt off and it shows us some stuff. Like it was a hit or miss movie, and I think they missed a lot. I think It's for those people who keep questioning us whether it's worth going to see. I think that if you're a fan of the original and you're an OG like that, I think it's worth going to see just to see and to compare. I also think that
should Jeff Thorne go see the movie?
No, Jeff should not.
Jeff should see this movie.
Jeff should not go and see it. But I think they missed the mark in the terms of
he's gonna get arrested going.
You can't really make a remake this long in time from the original, and especially a movie that was a flop, and just assume that just because it became a cult classic that it's going to carry over and that people are going to get it. And I think they messed up a good opportunity. I do believe the soundtrack, the original score, is going to get nominated. I think the score, to me, is what helped save the movie. It kept going for me, and I think the visuals help, but I just think that it is just, there's just so much it could have been, and it's not. So with that being said, Sam.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you. This is amazing.
We got to have Sam whenever you come back again. When that movie comes out, you got to come and come talk to us again.
For the next book.
For the next book.
Blackfish City.
April 2018.
Blackfish City.
Yep.
Pitch this one to us one more time. Tell us the book that they need to go and
get it. Where can
they go
get it? Where can they go get it?
The Art of Starving is in most bookstores and available online. And it's from HarperTeen. And it's called The Art of Starving.
Cool. That was it.
Thank you so much.
Are you on Twitter or Facebook?
I am at SentenceBender on Twitter because at Sam J. Miller was taken by this guy who has me blocked because people keep tagging him into conversations about me that he doesn't want to hear about. And I am on Instagram at Sam.J.Miller.
Cool. Where are you at, Chris?
I'm at Unauthorized CBD on Twitter and Instagram and on ShadowboxerCinema.net.
What's up? Lisa Colt.
You know I'm at Twitter. All the time.
She's going in on people.
You read some stuff on PitchFlix. So shout out to the people on Twitter. Hey, shout out to Michael Damon Thomas who hit me up on Twitter and said, "Bitch, where's my story?"
Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to bring it up.
I know, and damn. I was like, Sam always giving me looks already. So yeah,
this is an amazing writer who writes amazing stories and doesn't send them anywhere.
You know what? Mind your business.
Believe me.
This is my business.
Trust me. You and I can talk about this for a whole episode. I've been trying to get on.
Mind your business. I just got the, you know, hey. But shout out to the fam, you know, for people who are hanging out there, who are down for science fiction. Those of you who've been supporting Sam's writing career, my writing career, who've been putting in the good work. Because one of the things that people don't realize that, Sam.
Submitted themselves.
Yes.
You have a career. That's all.
Yes. Look, y'all put me out on blast like that for like what?
I need you to know.
This story has
submission costs no money. Submission costs no money.
Right.
Anyway, we're here to talk about Sam. So
Sam anyway, wants to talk about you.
Hey, so yeah, you can catch me on Twitter. You can catch me a lot of times riffing with Sam back and forth on stuff. And one of the things that people don't realize about me and Sam, we both love dinosaurs.
Right.
And we both crack up. If you just want to get a chuckle. Oh, there's a meme out there that takes old golden books from the children's books and puts adult versions on them. But there's one that's a
I have it
on my phone. I sent it to Sam. It's a golden child's book. It's a picture of these two dinosaurs. One has a really long and the other one's like a T-Rex. And the title of the book
Fight Me You Long Ass Bitch. Some people are like,
"What? I don't get it." They don't get it
because they don't put the emphasis right. So how is it supposed to be pronounced?
I can't help it. It's like, "What? Fight me, you long ass." It's just the tonal thing because the way that when you see the writing of it and you see the two dinosaurs on it, it's so inappropriate, but it's so fucking funny that no matter, I swear to God, if I just tweet it out to Sam, we both fall apart. Or he tweets it out to me. Anytime we see anything with dinosaurs, that's hilarious. Yeah. And also, Sam's a fantastic artist, so he's known for drawing dinosaurs and people, and then he'll juxtapose a drawing of a dinosaur, a cartoon drawing, with a real life picture.
Right.
So he has a picture of me. I said, "Draw me with Godzilla as my pet and do something with this." So he drew a picture of me with my, what was I wearing? Like some kind of like.
Who drew you the mermaid? Who did that?
Oh, that's the artist.
I was wondering.
Pamelina, yeah. But for Sam, yeah, he just drawing it. So he has a picture of me, Godzilla. I think I'm wearing, am I wearing?
You had sort of a Western.
Kind of a Western native, kind of thing. And I'm standing in front of, we're standing in front of the UCSD library. So it's the real life picture of the library with a cigar. Okay. You know, my little machete and Godzilla. So he's an artist, an activist. He's doing great work in New York with the homeless people and just really out there doing the work. He writes amazing stuff. I wouldn't brag about people because I don't like stuff coming back on me. I don't like people going up to me and saying, "You was wrong." But Sam is one of the people, if I say go get his stuff, if I say go online and read his stories, it's because it's excellent. And I think he has a voice that needs to be heard.
Right.
And when this movie comes out and he's rich and famous and fancy, and then he'll have a little cottage house in upstate New York that I can come and stay and write in and visit him, that would be awesome, Sam.
That's what's up.
If I'm not in jail for breaking into the OWN network.
And I'm your host,
Dylan Close.
Hilliard Guest. You guys can find me on Twitter at Hilliard Guest. Follow the show, ScreenwritersRR, on Twitter. Any questions, ScreenwritersRantRoom@gmail.com. Please go on iTunes, give us a 5-star review. We need that for the Matrix. Big shout out to everybody again. Thank you guys for all coming in. Shout out to all the countries that are following us. We appreciate it. So much shit going. I'm taking off to Sacramento. We're doing the big concert scene this week.
Okay.
So I'll be gone all week. Anyway, so things are good. Just got a new literary manager, so things are good. We'll talk about it.
Look at you. You always got something going on.
I always got some shit going on. Anyway, so thanks, Sam.
Thank you, Chris, so much.
Lisa, everybody joining me for Wakanda. You know the new shit we got now.
The new thing is Wakanda.
So on this show, we keep it real. We keep it opinionated. We keep it what, everybody?
Wakanda.
Peace.
Peace.
Wakanda's the new word?
Yes.
Damn!
I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real. Welcome to the Red Room. Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the rent room, we let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want. Welcome to the rent room.